There are at least a handful of profitable ways we can go in this text amongst the scholarly class that's out there. This is known as one of the most rich passages in all of the Bible. But I've chosen this morning to work with it within our Lenten reflections that we've been doing this year, and to think about how it is that God is with us in the dark times of our life that are marked by false thinking and by disordered desires. And as Jesus says, these things, these patterns of thinking, and or the desires that mix with them, either one producing the other, Jesus says, those patterns of life, they just cause us to thirst again. That there's nothing in them that's really living, nothing that can give or produce life. So this winter, two of our monthly speakers in our spiritual formation gatherings have brought to us the idea that it's really core to Christian spirituality that we learn to be alert to where the interactions and thinking and circumstances of our life are taking us. I remember Gary Moon drawing a little diagram that, are they taking us away from God or are they taking us to God? And when we were at Zona's house, Larry Warner saying a similar sort of thing. Just learning to be alert to where does a certain bit of thinking in my mind, a certain perspective I have or circumstances, where are they taking me? So this awareness step in the prayer of examine, which is our Lenten practice for this year, what it's meant to do is help us notice those inner movements of our heart. It's meant to help us name any kind of resistance or motive in us that might move us away from God. But not merely to do that, and certainly not for judgmental reasons, in terms of judgmental being an attitude, but meant to help us adjust in grace and peace to where we might need to, you know, realign ourselves, especially ourselves in the deepest inside. So what I want to do today is look at how this works in this text. Ready? So let's take that principle and let's see how we can work with it in this text. So let's start with the woman and what she's probably conscious of. And the first word that comes to my mind is trapped. This is probably not a promiscuous woman with a problem with sex. She's probably not a sex addict or something like that. Very likely this story doesn't have all that much to do with sex. I mean, this is not like the woman caught in adultery or something like that. This is not that kind of a story. This is somebody who, what she's probably very conscious of is, my life is broken. It's unworkable. It needs fixed. And for her way of fixing it was to secure herself in society. Like, if you think of Maslow's hierarchy needs, remember seventh grade? Like, she's trying to fit that whole triangle into guys. Do you remember when we were studying the Sermon on the Mount a few weeks ago when Jesus said, guys, don't as a whim just ditch your wife because you relegate her to a life of, anybody remember? Adultery. I mean, even Jesus knew that women had no way of sort of managing a life in what we'd think of as first century Palestine or biblical times, New Testament times. They literally had no way of securing themselves in any of that Maslow's hierarchy without a guy covering them. Well, what about those in her neighborhood? Well, they simply confirmed it. You're right, lady. Your life is screwed up and you need to get it together. And she had heard that message so many times that she didn't go to the well. I'm sure you've heard this your whole life, but bears repeating. She didn't go to the well in the cool of the morning or the cool of the evening with all the other ladies, knowing that she was an outcast. She's there at the height of the heat of the day. Well, what about to men? Well, to men, seeing her weakness and need and vulnerability, she's simply someone to exploit for their sexual needs. So ironically, if there's some sexual sin in this passage, it's probably more on the men than on the woman. I mean, is that creepy or what? Seeing a woman vulnerable with needs that she can't supply on her own, given her culture the way it is, men were finding in her someone simply to exploit. So in some, and this is so John-like, but it's not the kind of thing you would get just reading it. But if you know John and you just like, if you've, you know, like me, spent your whole life thinking about these things, it's so John-like that she doesn't even have a name. She doesn't even merit being named. The Jewish sayings of her day went something like this. This rabbis actually taught men to pray this way. May I never set my eyes on a Samaritan. It was actually explicitly taught by many of the rabbis of Jesus' day. Or, thank God that I'm not a woman. So as Beth said, now you got this Samaritan woman. Well, this is not an accident. I mean, both Jesus and John know what they're doing here. So may I never set my eyes on a Samaritan, and thank God I am not a woman. I mean, Jews didn't even eat anything prepared by or handled by Samaritans. But again, it's so John-like to say Jesus had to go through Samaria. Well, no, he didn't actually have to. If he was in a hurry, he might have, but he didn't have to. There were other routes to where he was going, but he kind of had to in this sort of divine appointment sense. And he had to talk to this woman. And catch this, he had to ask her. He literally had to. He didn't have a cup or a bucket. He had to ask her to handle the implement from which he was going to drink. Where his whole upbringing, ringing in his ears would have been, may I never lay my eyes on a Samaritan. Thank God I'm not a woman. And this whole thing plays out in the way John wants to see it is something like this. Okay, we see what the woman thought, her neighbors, the men. In some, we sort of see where she was stuck. But what about to Jesus? Well, to Jesus, she's a whole and complete human person worthy of his time and relationship and love. To Jesus, she's someone who he wills her good by offering her human life as God intended under his loving, catch this, non-exploitive care. I mean, the big revelation to this woman is here is a man who is different than any man you've ever known, who will care for you more deeply and completely, the whole triangle, and will do so with genuine altruism. Sorry for a big word on a Sunday morning. It just simply means to serve with no expectance of anything coming back. Now this woman could have given her 7 dictionaries on altruism. And in her deepest inner guts, she would have had no concept for such a word. A man caring for me, expecting nothing in return. And you know what? This is kind of the kind of dopey things that guys like me know and do. This is Jesus' longest conversation in all of the New Testament. This woman merits more of Jesus' attention than we would have read in John 3 with Nicodemus. You just think of all the conversations Jesus had in the New Testament. This is his longest conversation with anyone. So, you know, as Beth said, there's a wrestling that happens in this text, and the wrestling kind of just goes deeper and, you know, deeper and deeper through all these layers of stuff that we could get into. But what I want to say this morning is that this woman had what seemed to be to her a